On behalf of the MIT CIO Symposium, welcome to the afternoon session on cybersecurity. We have a very interesting and illustrious panel here to stimulate your thoughts on this topic. So to kick it off, we have Professor Stuart Madnick, and he'll be introducing the rest of the panel.
Thank you very much. I just want to say a few words at the beginning. I also want to extend the welcome to all of you, but in many ways the timing is brilliant because these are truly exciting times. There's almost something cyber-related happen daily, whether it be the claims to someone having hacked into the navigation system of an aircraft through the network of the in-flight entertainment systems, or more recently, the fact that the data files of the Tewkesbury, Massachusetts police were held for ransom. Anybody here from Tewkesbury, Massachusetts? Okay. So the events are happening everywhere. There are two quotes I like to often use to kind of motivate things. One was from the SEC commissioner who said that boards that choose to ignore cybersecurity do so at their own peril. The quote that I like, and I borrowed it and modified from others, goes as follows. There are only two kinds of organizations in the world now. Organizations that know they've been hacked and organizations that don't yet know they've been hacked. And the reason why I say that, in the case of the Sony attack many of you heard about, apparently the intruders were within their computer systems for several months before they chose to reveal themselves. According to a government study that I've read recently, the average attack has been going on for over 370 days before it's discovered. So to respond to these kinds of challenges, MIT has recently launched a trio of cybersecurity-related initiatives that some of you may have heard of. One of them is called Cybersecurity at CSAIL, the computer science laboratory, that's focused very much on improving the hardware and software. Another initiative is the Cybersecurity Policy Initiative, looking at the issue of government regulations. And finally, an initiative that we call the Interdisciplinary Consortium for Improving Critical Infrastructure Cybersecurity. Now, that's a mouthful, but abbreviation is ICICIC, which is IC cubed. Fortunately, we're at MIT. If it was at Harvard, only can do squares. At MIT, we can do cubes. In fact, actually, we actually published an article in the MISQ executive, and the editor was a Harvard graduate, and we had a diagram that was a cube, and they pushed us very hard to try to make it two-dimensional, and we did resist it. But the last thing I want to say, and to kind of allow us to kind of get a sense of what we're going to try to do in the panel today, I actually was involved in co-authoring a book in 1979. They actually had computers back in those days. And the book was called Computer Security. And one of the conclusions we came to in that book was that if you only addressed the technical aspects of cybersecurity, then you've left half or more of the problems unaddressed. In talking to various executives over the last few months, several of them told me, Madnick, you are definitely wrong. The number is 70 or 80%. The reason I mention that is the focus of this IC Cubed initiative is to look at, understand, and improve the organizational, managerial, and strategic aspects of cybersecurity. And with that thought in mind, we've assembled together an illustrative panel from a wide diversity of roles and industries that relate to that. What I'm going to do, rather than try to introduce them myself, I've asked each of the panelists to do two things in 2 minutes or less. We'll be timed. One, for them to introduce themselves however they wish to do so, but then also address one question, a starting question, which is what is the most important or challenging cybersecurity issue that they see themselves or in their organization currently? Without any further ado, let me turn it over to Schumann.
Well, thank you very much, Stuart, and thank you very much to the organizers for putting together such a fine symposium. My name is Schumann Ghosmajumder. I lead product management at a company called Shape Security in Mountain View, California. I was previously at Google for about 7 years, where I ran product for click fraud protection, which was the primary security threat to our business model. And that was my introduction, actually, to the world of security. And what I view as one of the most challenging problems that we're dealing with on a regular basis as an industry in the realm of security is the increasing sophistication of the criminal attack infrastructure that has been evolving over the course of the last 5 to 10 years. So just as we have created wonderful advances in terms of all of the great new technologies that we're utilizing for legitimate purposes across the world in the computer industry, so too have the criminals been advancing in the way that their infrastructure is set up, which is now completely commoditized and federated. There are specialists who fulfill the roles of compromising machines, who then hand off those compromised machines to other bot herders who organize them into botnets, who then hand off the botnet capacity for something like $2 an hour for 1,000 machines that can be rented to other folks that actually execute a multitude of different attacks. So this form of sophistication is really something that traditional security never contemplated. So traditional security, especially when it comes to the internet, was based around some assumptions like, for example, the fact that IP addresses used to be difficult to obtain. So if you have IP-based analysis and IP-based throttling, then if you have an attacker who has access to a botnet, they can look like an infinite number of new users, essentially. So this is one of the trends that we've been seeing, that companies that are otherwise secure, that are doing everything that they're supposed to do from a security perspective, are actually getting breached by attacks that they were never even contemplating. So I think that that requires a new mode of approach for the security industry as well as for companies.
Excellent. George?
Thank you. My name is George Wren. I'm currently the cybersecurity officer for Schneider Electric and vice president of cybersecurity there. My role is primarily focused on protecting our products and our customers that use our products. And those can be anything from an oil refinery to a wastewater treatment plant to a dam to a nuclear power plant. So we've got quite a diversity of critical infrastructure under our purview. I guess in looking at the threats, what I think most key in on is this concept of we have an aging infrastructure that was built upon really old technologies, whether it's Windows NT or even in some cases Windows 3.1, that has not been traditionally secure. And it was built during a time of relatively lax cultural security. So you had people building treatment plants for wastewater, electrical grids, substations, and other infrastructure in this sort of laissez-faire, sort of happy days environment, right, culturally. This is pre 9/11 and so on. So you've got that. Then you've got the recent digitization of just about everything and the interconnectivity of just about everything. And then we also have the disturbing trend that we've seen with respect to the ability for cyber criminals to use things like virtual currency that are now emergent to really orchestrate very complex and sophisticated attacks that were previously not possible, perhaps, even in some cases. And then lastly, to sort of frame this perfect storm, what I call a perfect storm right now, is we're still catching up with the security defects of the internet age, right? If you think about mainframe computing, distributed Unix computing, and client server, then web, and then mobile, and then cloud, and now the IoT, we're still backlogged on the fixing of the errors. We have failed to learn from the very simple lessons that we should have learned on mistakes we've made in programming and testing from a safety and security perspective. We haven't learned from our past mistakes, and so we're condemned to repeat them. So what I'm afraid is that we're now going to have systems that are out there that have life-threatening capabilities that are going to be deployed into those laissez-faire, unsecured or unsecurable environments that are connected to everything, virtual currency to help facilitate crime. All this together really adds up to a very scary, scary future. So that's really what I call the perfect storm, and it's really sort of based upon those primitives.
Nick?
Perfect, thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, I am Nick Milne-Hume. I'm the COO of 1E. 1E is not a a security company. We are basically a software company. And our software manages the software lifecycle for organizations. That is from software request through to deployment, management, reclaim, retirement. And we do that on hundreds and thousands of applications every single day for some of the largest organizations globally. Now, we believe very firmly that actually, software is at the heart of IT. And that therefore, really the secret to IT security and to cybersecurity is actually software security, or more specifically, systems management security. And recently, the Australian government, endorsed by the National Security Agency here and the SANS Institute in Washington, D.C., put out a survey which showed that up to 90% of all cyber attacks could be prevented by implementing four very simple systems management controls. That is operating system patching, application whitelisting, and control of user admin rights. Now, the big challenge, therefore, we see for security is why don't organizations implement this? And the statistics are stark. 75% of all cyber attacks could be prevented by just implementing known patching alone. 12% of companies don't have any patching policies at all, and so on. And so the challenge is really to focus on systems management as much as on security. Because if you don't and you focus on security only, without systems management, it is like putting a state-of-the-art burglar alarm into your home whilst leaving the doors and the windows open. You have to do both.
Thank you. If I had Roland.
Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Roland Cloutier. I'm the chief security officer for a company called ADP. That is not the alarm company. ADP is a human capital management institution that supports businesses around the globe doing things like payroll, retirement management, recruiting, and everything that our clients need as a business to manage their people assets, and that's what we do. We pay about one in five people on your street for the most part. About one in 10 pay slips around the world goes through our platforms. We have over 60 million folks on our systems, and we're arguably one of the world's largest cloud computing platforms from a services perspective. I have a really interesting job. We're a converged security organization at ADP, meaning that I have responsibility and accountability from an operations and R&D level for things like, obviously, cyber defense operations, our critical incident response centers, our product security teams, but also our criminal and civil investigations, our fraud prevention groups, and all of those shared operation and technology teams. So. Life's certainly been interesting over the last few years, as we'll be talking about. I think when I think about my job and what I do for the business and the economies I serve, I think one of the most challenging things we're facing today is this idea of protection at the speed of innovation. Right? As business, or even if you're with an agency, you have a certain function that you provide, and that's what that business does for its clients. And in order to get to the next step, you always have to be innovating. Well, innovation is such a positive thing. In defensive operations and prevention capabilities, it can be problematic. And when you think about the things we heard about the changing threat landscape, the massive amounts of compute power that, whether it's organized crime or state-sponsored entities or whatever it may be for the week trying to attack you, they have, in many effects, better technology capabilities than you do sometimes, and often better communications within their ecosystem. So how do you defend against that? How do you move the ball forward, allowing for new, unique coding capabilities on new platforms, distributed data points, down to mobile devices and beyond? And how do you really encourage and enable your business to do that? And oh yeah, the board pays me to make sure I protect that data, right? So that is probably one of the most difficult things. And at the end of all that, I have to manage an ecosystem of technologies, products, processes, compute in a cost-effective and cost-containment manner. And how do you do that in today's world, right? And when the code base has changed, the malware has changed, nothing out there supports it, I got to go implement something different. How do you use and leverage your platforms and your providers and your partners to do something that's cost effective?
Super. So hopefully you see we have a fascinating panel. So the way I want to proceed is as follows. We've assembled together a handful of questions that we discuss with the organizers and the panelists about. So I'm going to pose the question and have one or more of the panelists respond to it. We want to reserve 10 or 15 minutes at the end to allow you, so you can be, as we're going, you might be thinking of what kind of a provocative question you might have. So one of the questions, which some of you have touched upon, but I want to kind of come back around, it seems that in the last few years, the amount of attacks seem to be growing. And the question is, what accounts for that? Is it, are they actually growing? Is it the reporting of them is growing? And what can we learn from that phenomenon? I don't know who wants to take a first stab at that.
So I think that it's both. I think that one of the most positive things that's happened over the course of the last few years has been an escalation in the dialogue around security. So initiatives like IC Cubed and President Obama issuing cybersecurity initiatives, I think that all of that is tremendously helpful in terms of making security become top of mind. And as a result of that, there is greater awareness of how to be able to detect attacks and then report them, and greater acceptance of the fact that this is happening on a pretty widespread basis. So a few years ago, someone that, like an organization that might not be so eager to come forward now feels like there are other organizations that are sort of in the same boat. But at the same time, I think that there is a real escalation in terms of the criminal ecosystem realizing that there are many ripe targets out there, and there are common tools that they can use to be able to target many different companies simultaneously. And that's a different form of attack model than we've seen before.
Super. Anybody else want to comment?
Yeah, perfect. I mean, I think, yes, I mean, you know, that certainly. I think that the publicity has, you know, again, fueled this and the scaremongering. But actually, I think we've got two to three, you know, trends coming together, which we heard, you know, through the panelists, you know, before lunch, which was saying that the quantity of big data is basically doubling every 18 months, you know, right now. We heard about fintech, how, you know, all of these industries are being hit. You know, we've got digital disruption out there, Internet of Things, mobile devices, and so on. It is incredibly difficult when you can just get a phone, an iPad, whatever, download applications, bring them to work. It doesn't matter what policies there are. Shadow IT is springing up to actually circumvent, you know, rules and so on. And so I think there are so many more software apps out there, so many more platforms, so many more routes, you know, for people to target. And again, it's just very, very difficult. It's this blizzard of, you know, of big data applications and so on.
If you think about it. So it's been easier for our users and our businesses to go do these things, create more data, push it to the endpoints without the same controls. So that's bad enough. But the bad guys have the same thing, right? When could they get a 320 node cluster and, you know, EC whatever, and do it on a credit card that they stole? You know, at least people in your organizations use their Amex, right? You know, but it's easy, right? And the tools that are being created for us to drive economies and businesses and create beautiful and good things that solve hard problems in the world, they're using it for their advantage. And because they don't have standards, policy, financial issues, and they have their own sub-economy, they can do it faster, and a lot faster. The amount of malware that's created out there on a daily basis, this type of attacks, the attack engines that are created, these marketplaces. I mean, it is amazing how fast they get stood up, tore down, moved, obfuscated. And the second part I want to talk about is the privacy laws. It really enables them. Privacy laws globally and inabilities for governments to have realistic conversations about economic defense around computing platforms has allowed them to remain anonymous, obscure, with an inability to go get people. Now, don't get me wrong. I come from law enforcement background. Governments are stopping things every day, but not as much that needs to happen in that space.
Excellent. I want to do something interesting. Can I see a show of hands? How many of you are from a CIO organization, IT organization in your companies? A fair number of you, as I might expect. So I have a three-part question, if you will. The question is the relationship of cybersecurity activities in your company and the CIO. In particular, many companies have a chief information security officer, or CSO, if you will. So I'm going to pose three alternatives. I want to get a show of hands. So first I'll tell you what they are, and I want you to pick. Should the security activity be under the CIO, under the CEO, or under the board? Because I've had discussion with various people, and I've heard all three. So first, how many think should be under the CIO organization? Okay. How many think it should be under the CEO of the company? And finally, how many think it may report directly to the board? A couple. So I'm going to do is now turn it over to our panelists here and have them tell us which they believe and why they believe that. George, you want to start first?
Yeah, I've been quiet here, so I'll start.
Which is very rare for George.
Yeah, very rare for me. And I thought we agreed there'd be no Harvard jokes before we started this. It's usually a pretext for my involvement in these types of discussions. But anyway, that's out the window, it looks like. All right. It's definitely a conflict of interest to have the chief security officer underneath the technology organization, right? Should report into a CFO who has fiduciary responsibility for the organization, or to the CEO and the board. There should be multiple reporting lines, because what happens inevitably is, as the CSO, you know, there's a new project, it's coming along, it's got to go out, the business has got to get it out there, you know, and the CIO is, you know, his job is on the line. If that new app or that new project doesn't get delivered, he or she is on the line, and you report to he or she, and that creates a direct conflict of interest. In addition, when audits come in and you get audit reports back, and they say you need to fix all these things within your organization, you go to the CIO, and they've got a list of priorities that do not look like your list of priorities, and you say, hey, I want you to fix all these things, and you get strange looks, right? And by the way, they're controlling your budget, right? They're also controlling your budget, right? So now you're really doubly in trouble. So I honestly believe if you're going to be serious about cybersecurity, and I've told a lot of companies this as well in my consulting days, is you really need to have, at the minimum, a dotted line or even hard line to the CFO or another non-technology role within the company.
Yeah, I play a CSO during the week, all right? So I'm with you. Every company's different. So in some organizations, you just have people that, you know, can truly obfuscate their responsibilities. But in most, it just doesn't work. And it's an obvious segregation of duties issues. And I think from frameworks that have been stood up to independent, you know, big fours that come in and look, it's been one disaster after another when it comes to providing appropriate cybersecurity for businesses. But what CIOs can do, and you know, the discussion for some reason always does go to, should the CISO report to the CIO? It's what should the CIO do, yeah, right? And so you're responsible for business process delivery, technical business process delivery. So as CIOs, being held accountable for quality of security controls within those environments, the quality of some of the platform considerations, and how you measure and quantify those, and being held accountable to those, are things that should be owned in the CIO shop. You know, an integrated defensive platform means that we have appropriate and reasonable controls within our IT stack, and that doesn't mean that a CISO manages those independently, because it has to be end-to-end service ownership. But how do we think about security as a component of quality, and then make that the CIO's job?
So the thing that both of you just said reminds me of an issue. I mentioned earlier that we have this new initiative at MIT, this IC Cubed initiative. One of the projects we have is called the Cyber Safety Initiative. I'll just give you a bit of background, because I think it picks up on some of the things that George and Roland said. It's based upon work that was done actually by some of our colleagues in the aeronautics department at MIT. So the immediate connection between aeronautics and cyber safety is not obvious. But this is largely work by Nancy Levison, who was very much concerned about safety in the airline industry. And she was part of the panel that investigated the Challenger space shuttle explosion. And what was interesting, real quickly, as many of you may remember it, the kind of the press reports will say what happened was they launched the space shuttle on a particularly cold Florida day. And the space shuttle has these O-rings. I'm not an expert on it, but apparently they're kind of rubbery O-rings. And they get brittle when it gets cold. And some of them fractured a little bit, letting gases escape that caused the explosion. And all that is pretty much correct. But what was interesting in the study, and she developed a technique called cyber safety technique, safety management, which we call cyber safety as we adapted it, said that the issue was that that accident, unfortunately, was inevitable. Maybe not the details of it. The reason why they traced it back to an organizational change at NASA 2 years earlier, where the safety organization was made subordinate to the operations division, and the priorities and the mode of operation of safety changed. In the end, they concluded that there was a 1 chance in 100 that some accident would occur. This was Space Shuttle Launch 87. They were doing better than expected. The point being, though, is twofold. One, the issue of the organizational structure does play an important role. And this particular technique that we've used, the cyber safety techniques, takes the approach that they've been using to prevent industrial accidents and applies it to cyber, because a cyber event is like an accident. So there are techniques that can be adapted and applied to how we manage our organizations, how we manage our structure. So it just picks up on the things that, George had mentioned.
Yeah, and I would say one additional thing is that with the shuttle disaster, there was actually a business priority that drove that failure, which was that they had to have X number of launches per year to financially justify the program. So the management was under pressure. The engineers knew between Morton Thiokol and NASA, if you read the case studies, the Harvard Business School case study on this, what had actually transpired. I got it in the air. And it's actually one of the first cases that Clay Christensen makes you read in his program on product development. And so it was absolutely a business prerogative to deliver X number of Y, which in this case was launches, within the time frame to meet the program of the stated program financial objectives. That's what was driving the entire thing. And we're in the same boat, right? I mean, we're in the same business, really.
And what's interesting, if you think about cyber and what they do, it's risk management, yeah. Right? There are operations from an oversight and defensive management standpoint, but it's really risk management and who does risk-based, best in your organization, financial risk and things of that nature. And whether it's a CFO or it's a COO type organization, the question is who can broadly understand risk articulation to the overall business considerations, and that is probably best where a cyber program fits.
Well, I'm going to do things a little out of order. I had a couple more questions I want to come to, but based upon what you just said, I want to raise the following issue for us to talk about, and that is how to get the attention, support, and resources from top management to improve cybersecurity. And I'm going to give you three options, and you're welcome to pick any one of three or add a fourth one. One is the issue of the financial risk that the firm may face. The second may be the reputational risk, which may or may not be related. And the third thing, any potential liability, criminal or civil liability, that may exist.
So what's the difference between one and three?
The first one may be that the money is stolen. The other one is you get thrown in jail.
Which has a financial implication. Self-correcting problem, right?
Okay. So anyone want to comment? First, what have you found to be an effective method? And do any of those three have any effect?
I mean, I can kick it off. And we use a FAIR model, and it's a market-based financial measurement. So all of our risk-based measurements are done at the financial level. I think, really, when you're talking to the board, and I was asking the one and three question for a very specific reason, if you have open contract liability or you have open criminal liability because of something you're doing, at the end of the day, that's a cost. And whether it's a brand impact that causes downstream financial impact or it's criminal costs, legal costs, how many of you out there, just show of hands, curiosity, how many know what a single cyber incident at your business costs, just a malware incident to respond to? I see one, two, I see a handful of people. I can tell you, I know that it's about $250,000 per malware incident on real costs that it costs us to respond to. We see a lot of malware, right? So, I mean, everything we do in our business is financially based because that is how the board interprets it. That's how the business makes decisions on it.
Anyone else want to comment?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think for you know, for a vendor actually trying to sell, you know, a security solution, I think really everything ultimately comes back to cost. And so we do look at reputational risk, we look at the legal issues, and again, we do, you know, basically try to emphasize best practice and so on. End of the day, it comes back to cost. What is, you know, again, what's the cost to actually implement our solution? And again, what's the cost to us of not doing it? And I think that what, you know, has changed over the last year or so is the really clear understanding of what that cost is. And again, you know, in terms of the studies we've seen, the kind of average cyber attack, you know, costs something like $7.6 million on average. Now, of course, some of them are significantly higher, but actually the cost of fixing or to prevent it versus the cost of being hit is actually, you know, very, very small. It is literally 5 to 10, you know, 10%. So again, it is cost in our view.
So let me kind of piggyback on the beginning part of my question. In general, do these arguments persuasive to top management? Do you find that they are willing to put in whatever resources are needed to address these issues? Or if not, why not?
Okay, so could I just follow, just to tell one story. With one of the very public, things which happened, which basically happened last year, we'd been talking to that company really for the last 12 to 14 months, and you know, we'd been talking to them about, you know, their patching wasn't good, infrastructure wasn't good, they didn't know what their kind of apps were, half their apps weren't being used, and so on. Just basic systems management stuff. They knew they had an issue, but the kind of edict came down, not this year, next year in the budget. 11 days after they got hit and it went viral, they bought our entire software. A classic, you know, shut the door after the horse has bolted. Now, would our software have actually prevented them being hit? No, but actually, it might have prevented some of those emails getting out, you know, and so on.
That's not what your sale guy told me.
He's there. Yes, I mean, I think that, it is incredibly easy to solve. If you want to focus on it. And actually, there are so many best practices out there now, which actually are just about good day-to-day housekeeping, which can just make things much, much easier for yourself.
So let me piggyback on that question, if you will. We sometimes in our group here refer to the issue of the security culture of an organization. One of my colleagues, Michael Coden, who's an associate director of our center, comments that when he goes into most factories, he'll see a sign over the door, you know, 350 days since last industrial accident. When's the last time you went into a data center and saw a sign, 15 milliseconds since last cyber attack?
I am so doing that when I get back to my
So the question is kind of a culture, over time, not perfectly, but over time, the industrial era, factories and so on, have developed an increasing, probably still from flawless, but an increasing attention and awareness and culture of safety. Yeah. What's your sense, where are we in terms of the cyber safety of organizations, and what, if anything, can be done to change that?
I'd like to answer that question. So I think I had the good pleasure of sharing a post with Roland at EMC together. And one of the things that we did there was we looked at Six Sigma, and we looked at ways of applying that same kind of X days since industrial accident to try to monetize from a quality perspective the impact of cybersecurity on our offers, right? Mm-hmm. And how we protected those. And we got a lot of good traction on that because it was in a language that the manufacturing understood. Mm-hmm. It was something that they could tangibly measure and understand. Executive management, I think at that time it was Frank Hauck, one of our VPs of and one of our champions of Six Sigma in the company, was very much into quality, you know, similar to Motorola culture. So I think if you could take a culture like Motorola has around quality, or GE is a good example of a Six Sigma organization, or EMC in that case, if you get a company like that and you can infuse in and explain cybersecurity in those terms, then I think you can have an incredible cultural success. And the opposite is true. If you are unable to link your cyber goals and aims into the way we do things, the sort of Anan-K or the sort of culture, you would say, you're doomed to fail, right? That is true. So I've seen both of those cases, and I've seen it quantitatively done in a good way.
A lot based on the pre-existing culture of the organization. So to the point that Roland was making before about it being a risk management issue more than anything else, you've got some organizations that just get it right away and they understand that IT security is an existential risk for the company if they don't get it right. And then other companies, let's say, you know, you're not a bank, let's say you're a restaurant chain. There are more limited implications of having some type of security event. And as a result of that, the way that CISOs and security in general are managed within the organization can vary a lot.
And the applicability has to be applied just in that manner to the industry or the business that you're serving. And the most effective mechanism, believe it or not, other than electric shock therapy, if they click on the link, right? We're testing that. No, just kidding. the explanation to the organization, right? So I sit in this business where they live to serve. All right, like NPS, they eat it for breakfast. Net promoter scores. They want a happy client, so they'll do anything to support a happy client. And so when you sit down with them to talk about, you know, clicking on the link could do this and this, and you know, then you get malware and it'd be really uncool. You know, they don't get it, right? So if you sit there and say, imagine this, you did something as simple as X, and we couldn't pay 1 in 5 people on your street. Worse, that you caused an event that allowed a small